Ireland may be a small island on the edge of a continent, but our unique mix of animals and plants gives us a fascinating natural history. This series celebrates the animals that share our island, and we meet some of the people who know them best. I'm Colin Stavridge-Johnson, and this is Nature on One. I've spent a great deal of my adult life overseas, and when I have come back to Ireland over the years, there's a few things I really look forward to hearing. Now, one is a very special bird with a haunting cry that for me is one of the most evocative and memorable sounds of the summers of my youth. It's a sound I associate with the wild places in Ireland, the upland bogs and mountains, and it's a sound which until recently was very common in Ireland. That's the cry of the curlew. I've been amazed and saddened to hear that in recent years, breeding populations of curlew are under massive decline in this country, and there's a very good chance that we're actually going to lose them. In this episode, I'm going to look at some of Ireland's most endangered animals. I'm going to go in search of the curlew in my home county of Mayo. I'll be chatting with Anita Donaghy, who works for Birdwatch Ireland, to hear what she thinks gone wrong here for this bird. And later on, I'll meet up with ecologist Evelyn Moorkens, who has some good news regarding one of our rarest creatures. Today, I haven't travelled far. I'm in County Mayo, and I'm going to try and track down a pair of curlew on their breeding grounds, because there's a sound they make that you will only hear in summer when you actually come across a nesting pair. It's mid-June, the weather isn't bad for this part of the country, and I've had a tip-off from people who are studying curlew in the field as to the general area where I might find them. I'm on a stretch of bog just north of Loch Mask, and now to me this looks like a perfect little breeding habitat for curlews. It's nicely wet and marshy, and curlews need soft ground because the adults have these really long bills and they probe into soft ground to find their food. So that's certainly there. It's also nice and open. And ground nesting birds like to be able to see some distance from their nest so that they won't be surprised by predators, so that they can slip away if a predator like a fox arrives. And there's also good little bits of cover, good places where they can conceal the nest itself. So you just wonder why they're not here. I've been here for probably 2 or 3 hours now and listening to the skylarks. But very little else. It feels like there's something missing from this place. I was hoping if I didn't get to see one that I would at least hear one or hear some hint, but having been here for this long, I don't think there's anything here, so I reckon I should go and try another spot. Anita Donaghy works for Birdwatch Ireland and is in charge of the Cry of the Curlew project.
I think what maybe causes some confusion is that although there were lots of curlew in Ireland and not necessarily sort of Irish curlew as it were, they don't breed here.
That's right, exactly. And this is kind of a source of confusion because the Irish population, the native Irish curlew breed in upland areas and in wet grassland areas, marginal sort of farmland. But from about July onwards, they start to move towards the coast, and it's there that they spend the winter feeding on the mudflats. They have this very long down curved bill, and therefore they need to probe the soft mud for food. So they will spend the winter on the coastal mudflats, and there they're joined by large numbers of birds from other parts of Europe, particularly Scandinavia, parts of Britain as well, and they come to Ireland to take advantage of the mild winters. So it's very confusing. People see large flocks of curlew on the coast during the winter and then can't really understand why we're saying they're so rare, but most of those will leave again in spring. And we'd be left with our very, very small Irish population.
And if you were to have sort of an estimate now, what do you think the population might be? How many breeding pairs is your sort of feeding? I know it's a hard one to sort of tie down.
Well, we would estimate that there's probably somewhere between 200 and 300 pairs in the whole of Ireland. In Northern Ireland, they're doing better in some areas. There's probably a population of 60 or 70 in Northern Ireland alone, and another possibly 200 pairs in the Republic of Ireland, but probably less than that, maybe even only 100 pairs, you know. So we're really estimating that it's somewhere between 200 and 300 pairs for the whole island.
That seems very, very few. And were there any estimates from, say, you know, 20, 30 years ago? Do we know how many were here then?
Well, the best information that we have comes from the Breeding Atlas, which was there's just been a recent one completed. Before that, there was one that was carried out in the late 1980s. And there was a population estimate generated from that survey of about 5,000 pairs for Ireland. Now, we don't know if that population estimate was possibly a bit high or if it was accurate, but by any kind of measure, there's been a huge decline.
As I drive across Mayo on the hunt for a bird that was once so common, I can't help but think about what else we've lost and what's on the verge of being lost. Now, the researchers working in the field reckon there may be only two or three pairs of curlew in the whole county of Mayo. So tracking them down is not going to be easy.
Afternoon with scattered outbreaks of light rain spreading southwards. The rain will die out later and it'll be cool. Well, that's all for now. We'll have news again on Radio 1 at 5.
I've just recently heard that, unbelievably, you can actually still shoot curlew in winter. You can hunt them. You've got all these people out and lots of money being spent trying to save the last remaining birds during the summer season. And then come winter, you can take out a shotgun and blast them out of the sky. Now, surely that makes no sense whatsoever. Now, the argument is, of course, that in wintertime, thousands of curlew come in from Scandinavia and Britain to seek refuge from the colder, harsher conditions up there. They mix in with our birds. So you might be wandering along ashore in winter and you'll see lots and lots of curlew, and you could be forgiven for thinking that there's no problem with curlew. But how can a hunter tell whether the bird that he's got in his sights is an Irish one or a Scandinavian one? Well, of course he can't. He's no idea. Now, the chances are it might well be a Scandinavian one because there are lots more of them. But you might be shooting one of those last 200 breeding Irish birds. And the fact that this extraordinary relationship between looking after them in the summer and shooting them in winter still exists, to me, is just unbelievably stupid.
But that sort of decline, has the landscape changed that much in the last 20 years?
Well, you'd be surprised, Colin. I think, you know,
whenever
we went out to do these surveys, we went back to areas that were traditional curlew strongholds, if you like, areas where they had previously been recorded. And in these areas, just direct observation kind of indicated big changes in the landscape. And it's really, I think, at the landscape scale that that the habitat has really been lost. So large areas have been afforested. There has been a lot of peat cutting and a big increase in the mechanical peat extraction in particular. And I think, you know, the practice of laying peat out to dry on sort of flat areas, that happens during the curlew nesting season. So, for example, we might have gone on our first visit during our survey and observed kind of quite a nice flat area that was marginal, a bit of boggy ground, and thought, you know, this looks perfect for curlew. And then why are they not here? And then when we go back on our second visit, you know, there's large areas have been covered with peat, you know, from that's been mechanically extracted. So if there had been curlew nesting there, you know, obviously that would have totally disrupted their breeding attempt and they probably would have left. So, I mean, we don't have any evidence that this is a direct cause, but, you know, instinctively you might feel that that's the case. And also, I suppose, historically, there was, you know, much more drainage and improvement of upland areas and possibly also some abandonment. You know, some of these areas have become scrubbed over and they're now covered in gorse or whatever. And again, that would reduce the available habitat for curlew. And more recently, other factors such as wind farms, for example, would all have played a part. And I think if you go out and you take a walk in an upland area, you know, you'll see all of these things happening in the landscape, you know. And so it's been at that macro level, really, I think, that the habitat has gradually been lost.
Are they very much, is it the case that if a curlew nests in one particular area one year, it'll come back? Are they very sort of site faithful?
Yes, they are. They're quite site faithful, and they're also very long-lived birds as well. So they will keep coming back to the same area. This is possibly one of the reasons why, you know, there's been this sudden, what appears to be a sudden huge decline, you know, because the fact that they're quite long-lived might be masking the fact that the productivity is very poor. You know, suddenly then, those birds that were nesting, you know, that weren't producing any young, they die, and then suddenly there's none to take their place, do you know?
So. And so Birdwatch Ireland have launched a campaign called The Cry of the Curlew.
We'd be very interested to hear from people who think that they may have a breeding pair or know where a breeding pair of curlew are. And a breeding pair are two birds together in an upland area where they'd be quite visible, making the long display flight very obviously, you know, together as a pair and nesting. Anything more than three birds together is a flock, and they're probably not breeding, especially if you see them on the coast. So it's the breeding pairs that we're particularly interested in. And if anybody thinks that they have or know where a breeding pair is, if they could contact us through the Birdwatch Ireland website, that's just www.birdwatchireland.ie, and there's links there on the website to report breeding curlew, and we'd be very grateful for anybody who would let us know about those.
I just gotta take it easy here. We just pulled in at the side of the road. We've crawled over a farm gate and we're just moving up behind a few trees because just beyond us, we think we just spotted some curlews. Just gonna wait here a minute because there's a shower coming in, and if they do have chicks, we want to make sure that we don't upset them and the chicks end up getting wet. And now, I can't quite see the birds. It's amazing. They're our biggest wader, but when they're sitting tight down on the bog or standing still, they're actually very hard to spot. Now, there's two guys up on the hill. They are walking down. There's a little track that leads through this bog, and they are going to walk right through this curlew territory. And when they do, those birds are going to come up in the air and start calling. It looks to be a perfect little nesting territory, though. There's wet areas, little pools where they can bring the chicks to feed, lots of cover, and the bog is just starting to, there's some, oh, that's it. Those guys have been spotted, I think. I just heard the first little warning call. What an amazing sound. The adult, I can't tell, I think it might have been the male. They just came up. It flew up maybe 25 feet in the air. It's now calling from a tussock on the bog. Now both parents are keeping an eye on us. They're both standing on tussocks so they can keep us in clear view. And one of them is out, he's just taken to the air. But they're not looking at us, they're looking at the guys walking down the road. And this is now sadly such a rare sound in Ireland. Hard to believe that I could be looking at one of the last perhaps three breeding pairs in the entire county of Mayo. It's not just sad, it's kind of tragic. I'm off to meet up with Evelyn Moorkens at an old canal feeder outside Longford. Now, Evelyn is an ecologist who studies snails and slugs, a group of animals which are really in trouble in Ireland because of wetland loss and pollution, but it sounds like she may just have a very positive story for us today. How would you describe this place that we're walking through today?
What we're walking through today is the... What we have beside us is the old bed of the feeder, the Longford feeder towards the Grand, towards the Royal Canal. And the feeder hasn't been full of water for a long time. But what has happened is that it started to vegetate up while it retains the original source, the spring sources. The vegetation has become very natural. So when the canals were built a couple of hundred years ago, they would have dug into a lot of very, very natural, classy habitats and used them to feed the canal system. And now that this has gone back into disuse, the really, really nice habitats have come back into it. So it's mimicking very, very natural fen vegetation. So peaty, alkaline, swampy, beautiful wetland habitat. And this beautiful wetland habitat supports an endangered snail species called Vertigo malinciana, named after a snail man called De Moulin. So the malinciana, after him. It used to be known from quite a wide variety of sites, but an awful lot of those sites in the interim have been drained. An awful lot of them were drained with the major bog drainages in the 1950s to 1970s. And it used to be all the way from Kerry through the Midlands and down to Wicklow. So what happened over the last 3 years is that Parks and Wildlife set out to try and find out how things were going with the species. And in doing that survey, the two sites that were known from Longford were found to have been destroyed. And one of the ways in which they were destroyed was the reopening of the Royal Canal, because in order to wet the canal, the wetland habitats within it were a bit like this, had to be dredged out. So in response to that, this was picked up by a lady called Dr. Amanda Brown when she was writing the biodiversity plan for Longford. She had hold of these results and made point. This again was picked up by Waterways Ireland, who said, well, we never intend to be going around destroying habitats. Let's set up a study to see, is there anywhere else in Longford where this endangered species might be? And if not, could we reintroduce it? Could we create some habitat and reintroduce it? And in the course of that survey, this site was found. This is probably the best site in Europe.
Wow.
This is an amazing, amazing site for this species, because it's beautiful habitat, as you can see. Really rich, tall vegetation in swampy, wet conditions. Still being fed by all these beautiful springs, but, you know, not being inundated. It's a very even sort of wetness level. So it's much the same all the year round. Fantastic, fantastic find, a world-class find.
So how exactly did this discovery take place? Was there a day?
Oh, yes. When it happened at the other end of the feeder, when we were actually walking along the Royal Canal, and it came up across the feeder, and instantly from the first few metres into the feeder, there we found it in glorious numbers. An absolutely perfect condition. So then we decided we would walk the whole length of this feeder and see how far it went and when did it run out. And it didn't run out until we were almost in Longford.
Wow.
So this is, you know, 5 kilometres multiplied by, you know, a good 3 metres of canal. So it equates to the most enormous fen and probably the biggest site now that's left in the world.
Isn't that brilliant?
So
for you,
happy.
That must have been such
very
a buzz, because you spend your life studying the sort of slimy things that a lot of people wouldn't really notice or take note of, the slugs and the snails and the mollusks and things that people don't give much attention to, but they're extremely important indicators of how good habitats are.
Yeah, absolutely. And when you see, I know this is radio, but when you actually see the species, you will see it's not slimy. It's absolutely beautiful, and you'll be overwhelmed by the beauty of it. But that aside, yes, it is an indicator of very fine habitat, and you know, rare species and rare habitats go together. This snail is rare because the habitat is rare.
And because this particular species is here, does that mean there are lots of other sort of rare things here as well?
Well, one of the things that is quite likely to be here, and if you look at the edges, as the damp edges as they go down there, you see the scabious flower.
Yes.
There. So I think it would be very likely that there'll be marsh fritillary butterflies.
Absolutely.
Here because they like fens.
Yep.
They like young scabious growing, which is exactly how it's growing, because it's growing on the slope there. It's not getting woody and overgrown. It's actually being managed just the way the butterfly likes it as well. And, you know, beetles, dragonflies. If you're here in summer, it would be a wonderland.
So. Fantastic. It looks good today, even on a kind of cold, blustery October day. As soon as I came over that bridge and looked down, I thought, I've never seen anything quite like that before.
It's pretty unique, isn't it?
Yeah.
Would you like to get down into
it? I would. So essentially now, we've come down the little bank and we're walking along the bottom of the canal. Walked along the bottom of the canal before, Evan. So
here's the challenge. Let's find the snail.
New species for me in Ireland if I see it. But I dare say there aren't many people, Evan, in the country who would recognise it.
Once you see it once, you'll know it forever.
So you're checking out the...
I'm checking out the stems.
How big a snail am I looking for, Evan?
It's the biggest horse snail in the country. It's almost 3 millimetres.
Okay, so there's another question that you just walk around the corner and then you say, hey, there it is, up there.
Well...
Not quite.
You will see it when you see it.
Yeah.
So you're basically looking for a little brown dot.
A little brown dot amongst lots of brown vegetation.
Yeah.
You can imagine school groups coming here, can't you? Wandering along this old canal.
And, I hope so.
You know... And because there's lots of calcium here, there's lots of shell-making material.
Absolutely. And they're only little snails.
Yeah.
But it's like a tropical jungle.
It is.
When you're down at this level, it's just magic.
It is magic. I just heard a sort of a noise of excitement up ahead. Great stuff. Well, I think I'm going to find a new species. It's not every day you see a new species. But to my knowledge, I've never seen one of these little creatures before.
Right.
So, Evelyn, you're in luck. We're in luck.
We are. I want to present to you one of the rarest and most threatened species in Ireland. And the nice thing is that Ireland is the hotspot. One of the real hotspots for it, so it's very good that you should see this. So this is Vertigo valenciana, and it's all age groups, from the tiniest little emerged young snail there to a couple of half-grown ones here, and then the daddies up here.
The daddy and mummy of them all.
So these...
They're up.
That's exactly doing what they should do, which is attaching themselves to the very structured vegetation. So now, this time, look through your lens and get your eye close to them and you'll see how pretty the whorls are, and you just can't fail to fall in love with them.
Oh, they are beautiful. They're like little pearls almost. They are beautiful.
They're gentle little things.
Oh, absolutely.
Perfectly formed.
You say it's an adult, but it almost has a look of a creature that's just been born. It's so perfect.
Grown.
That's half grown.
Yeah, this is the littler one here.
Yeah.
If you get close to that one.
So they've got how many whorls? This one looks like it might have about 3.
Yeah, it's got the top one, which it was born with, and then it's got 2 more. I think 1.5 more have grown since it emerged.
Yeah, are they? Would you call them almost a bronzy sort of colour?
Yeah, bronzy kind of looking. And there, this one.
Oh, and here comes the rain.
How can you notice it's raining when you're looking at
Oh, they really are beautiful, though.
That's it, Vertigo valenciana.
Otherwise known as.
De Moulin's whorl snail.
De Moulin's whorl snail. Very good. But you've got your own little name for them.
Moulies.
Moulies. There you go. I wonder did the gentleman ever realise that people would be calling them moodies. How are they doing? I mean, you look for the most part, you're looking for snails and mollusks. How generally are they doing?
Well, there are approximately 170 species in Ireland. 5 or 6 of them are pests that everybody hates. And the rest of them are, in general, they're living in wild places. About a third of those are doing quite badly because the places that they are that they need to support them are habitats that are not as common as they used to be, and in some cases are very rare. And where these habitats are very rare, the species are considered to be endangered, threatened with extinction. And there's a lot of places in Ireland where they're kind of okay, but you won't get anything rare there. And if that's the best we can do, it's a shame because we've lost these really, really rare habitats and we don't want to lose them. We want to just maintain a few so that there are special little creatures that people can see, and that tells them, yeah, this is a very special place.
You know, when you think about the curlew and the smaller little animals like the snails that Evelyn has been studying, they're all basically facing the same problem. And that's loss of habitat. The landscapes which characterise Ireland, the damp places, the wetlands and the bogs, they have changed fundamentally over the last 100 years, and with that have come consequences. What we've got to do is to find as many of the great habitats that are left in this country, and that's what both Anita and Evelyn are trying to do. We've got to find those places and we've got to protect them. Otherwise, we're just going to lose so many creatures that are so much a part of our culture and history.